Mrs. D'Ambrosio, Mr. Bergen.
May it please the court, Marcus Bergen on behalf of Jeffrey D'Ambrosio and Dwayne Petey. This case involves two spheres of conduct, tax and gambling. The defendants founded an internet sports book. They also filed false tax returns. They also participated in and stipulated to, as part of the plea agreement, participation in a tax scheme. They did not, however, create the tax scheme, solicit the tax scheme, or propound the tax scheme to others. The scheme was created and executed by an as-yet-uncharged but disbarred lawyer, David Tedder. Some of the defendant's proceeds from the gambling enterprise were made available through the Tedder tax scheme. Tedder also came to control other monies that were not related to the gambling matter. In the end, Tedder controlled various amounts of money of the defendants and later absconded with them. The joining of these two distinct offenses in the plea agreement, the gambling enterprise and the tax offense, were found by the district court to be sufficient in order to group them pursuant to 3D1.2. Then, having grouped the offenses, the district court applied the enhancement for role in the offense pursuant to 3B1.1 for their leadership role in the tax offense based on their leadership role in the gambling offense. I believe the district court was wrong in both regards. Guidelines, case law, and policy underscore this error. The district court ought not have grouped the offenses and ought not have enhanced the offenses for the tax offense based on an alleged leadership role. The district court noted that the grouping issue was difficult. With great respect and fondness for the district court, the question is not difficult and is answered easily in four parts. First, under 3D1.2, grouping is not automatic. Second, the offenses ought not be grouped because each offense quantifies harm and victims differently. Third, the tax and the gambling offenses were created and operated independent of one another. Fourth, the grouping and tax offenses, grouping the tax and gambling offenses frustrates the policy of the guidelines of incremental sentencing. The district court relied on the fact that, in its view, the offense involved substantially the same harm. Gambling and tax offenses, however, as the guidelines and policy illustrate, address differing harms and differing victims. The two types of offenses do not permit the district court to assess a global harm, such as when the district court is presented with a case involving money laundering and fraud. Indeed, this court is not presented with any appellate case in which tax and gambling offenses have been grouped under 3D1.2, and the reason is sound, especially in this case, because the tax offense did not serve to perpetuate the gambling offense. The victims and the harms caused are distinct, and there is no mandate to group them. That the tax offenses, that is, count two of the information and the stipulated conduct, ought to be grouped together is clear. But then you cannot go and group together this other sphere of conduct, the gambling, with the tax. And the reason for that is the guidelines provide the necessary guidance on this point. If we look at the applicable guideline section for each offense, we see that they look at different harms, different victims, and different purposes. 2E3.1, the gambling guideline, seeks to redress the facilitation of gambling where it is not permitted. It addresses racketeering and organized crime. And the quantum of harm is a black and white one. There is either facilitation of the gambling, there is either engaging in gambling, or there's transmitting of wagering information, or there is not. Gamblers are the victims of this offense. It's not the government. Moreover, there are no specific offense characteristics for these offenses. By contrast, 2T1.9, or any of the subsections under Chapter 2T, measure loss of revenue to the government. The greater the loss, i.e., the greater the tax loss, that is the harm that the guideline measures, and therefore increases in punishment. It is a gradation, in contrast to this black and white issue under 2E3.1. The purpose of the guidelines for the tax offenses are to punish the violator and to promote respect for the tax laws. The Second, Third, Fourth, and Sixth Circuits all use similar reasoning as found in the Third Circuit's case of Vitale, which involved a defendant charged with wire fraud and tax evasion, in determining whether the offense involves the same harm. In Vitale, the wire fraud and tax evasion counts, while related to one another, were not so closely related that they should have been grouped together, the court held. And in so holding, the Third Circuit rejected the reasoning of the Fifth Circuit in Haltham, that such counts should always be grouped together. The Third Circuit further noted that regardless of grouping, the offense levels were already enhanced as a result of a specific offense characteristic. In this case, the district court relied on that specific offense characteristic to group the offenses under 3D 1.2 sub C because the fraud count, and quoting from the guideline, embodies conduct treated as a specific offense characteristic under the tax evasion scheme. The Third Circuit disagrees with this analysis, and I encourage you to do as well. In a story cited in our briefs, the Third Circuit held that the commission listed the failure to report criminally derived income as a specific offense characteristic for tax evasion in order to deter concealment of such income, and to then group the offenses would negate that enhancement if that were to be the basis for grouping. This circuit's decision in Wilson does not lead to the grouping of the tax and gambling offenses. The reasons set forth in Wilson, I think, argue very strongly that the offenses ought not be grouped. And to speak colloquially about Wilson, it presents essentially a chicken and egg test. Can one offense occur without the other? And in this case, we have a gambling offense which was started without consideration of the tax offense. It was conducted without the tax offense. And on the tax side, you had David Tedder, the disbarred lawyer, promoting his schemes to other individuals other than my clients, managing my client's assets before, during, and after our client's conviction. So you've got these two different spheres.
How are they reporting their gambling income before this scheme came along?
There was only a short period of time before the scheme was, before the money was used through David Tedder's organization.
So you talk about the chicken and the egg. There's not a lot of.
Had they not used David Tedder, they could have reported the income. And in fact, in this case, the false statement, count two, related to their not answering a question correctly about their having an interest in an offshore bank account related to the sports book. The money could have been repatriated in a number of ways, and not necessarily through David Tedder. And he did not rely on them for his tax scheme or for his divesting them of their assets.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berghahn. Mr. O'Shea?
Good morning. I'm on chair for the United States. I will begin by answering your question. They didn't report their income from the gambling enterprise, of course. Mr. Petey did a little bit the first year, and then they decided, they had very much rather not report their income, and that made perfect sense. Had they been reporting their income from this illegal gambling enterprise, had they been paying the excise taxes, had they been doing their controlled foreign corporate returns, that will, of course, all flag the United States that, in fact, they had this scheme going and multiple ongoing violations of 18 U.S.C. Section 1084.
So I particularly don't understand the part of your brief in which you say that the tax and gambling offenses were properly grouped. You not only cite no case for that proposition, you don't even mention all the cases cited by your opponent. And what is more, grouping usually leads to more lenient sentencing, doesn't it?
Yes.
So is it the policy of the Justice Department to expand the grouping concept as far as possible?
It is, I can't say what the position is. I believe the position is to take them, Your Honor, case by case and analyze them as the district.
You mean in all these other cases you cited, the government was fighting for grouping? Surely it was on the other side in all those cases.
Surely.
And it won.
Right.
So now you turn around and argue the opposite. You abandon the Justice Department's position in all the other cases in order to sustain this particular judgment. I don't understand that. How can that be sensible Justice Department policy?
Your Honor, I believe it's sensible
department. Look, if we hold that these counts were properly grouped, then the defendants in these other circuits would say, well, look, the Seventh Circuit now holds that gambling and tax is grouped. The Justice Department takes that position. Must have abandoned what it said in all the other cases.
We take each guideline section in a
there's nothing about each guideline section. Tax and gambling grouping issues have arisen in other cases.
And
in the other cases, you took the opposite position. The Justice Department took the opposite position from what it's taking here.
Your Honor.
And you don't even discuss any of these other positions. So what's going on here?
What's going on, Your Honor? If you do the math, the grouping is irrelevant.
That's not the point. The point is the Justice Department appears to be taking completely inconsistent positions. And your position here undercuts the position of the Justice Department in the vast range of cases where grouping advantages the defendant rather than the prosecution.
I respect
that. Anyway, what attention are we supposed to pay to a brief which does not either provide any case support or, for that matter, argument for its position, but doesn't even refer to the cases going the opposite way discussed by the opponent?
I believe what Mr. Graber should have said more clearly is that if you do the math grouping, Graber, my co-counsel.
What, are you backing away? Is not your brief?
Well, I didn't write it, didn't sign it, but I believe what he should have said more clearly.
Oh, and now you're saying what he should have done?
More clearly to say it's irrelevant. And he did say it is irrelevant. It's a question under whether this
is irrelevant or were these accounts properly grouped?
If you do the math.
Well, which were they?
They were properly
grouped, unless you're prepared to repudiate a whole bunch of cases the Justice Department has won.
Perhaps the lack of attention at this point reflects that if you do the math, Your Honor, either way, we wind up
at
27.
Forget the math.
Well, that's the issue.
No, it's not the issue. You said these counts were properly grouped.
I believe the district court was right.
Wasn't right, because this is contrary to what all the courts have held and what the Justice Department's, not only what the Justice Department's position is, what the Justice Department's position is bound to be, because the grouping generally favors defendants.
Anyway,
it doesn't make any sense, because the injury, I mean, you have a ridiculous line in your brief in which you say the harm was the same, money. That's like saying you automatically group any collection of counts, however disparate, if they're all charging financial crimes rather than, you know, physical crime. That's ridiculous.
Right.
Now, in addition to that, the harms are different. The tax evasion is a harm to the, you know, to the government, the taxing authorities, the other taxpayers. The gambling, I don't know exactly who's harmed by gambling. Maybe it's the gamblers. Maybe it's some moral interest of the community, something like that. But different victims, the nature of the offenses are different. The examples, if you look in the guidelines, the examples of grouping are where you have things like bank fraud and wire fraud and falsifying an application for a loan or something like that, and it's all the exact same event giving rise to violations of different statutes.
Right.
Here you have something quite different. They engage in illegal gambling, and then they fall in with this lawyer, and they say, oh, great, well, we did this illegal gambling. We don't want to pay taxes on it. So it's a related offense, but it's not something which entitles them to a break. because after all, it's all one ball of wax.
I respectfully submit that the district court was right. And if the court is saying that the government always takes a position in the group and goes one way or the other way, that's wrong, Your Honor. And the reason that's wrong is we take them case by case. And if it benefits the defendant, and it's fair under 3D1.2,
I don't know what you're talking about, case for case. In all the other cases, the Justice Department has taken the position that tax and gambling don't group. And here you're taking the opposite position.
And I believe it was appropriate. I think the district court was
right.
Well,
it's not appropriate. Then all those other cases are wrong. Is that what you're saying? But you didn't bother saying
it. I think under those facts.
But you didn't bother saying it.
I think we do have the same victim. We still have a representative government here.
But in the other cases, you took the opposite position. So you're repudiating. Have you consulted with your superiors in the Justice Department to see whether you can reverse Justice Department policy on grouping tax and gambling?
I'm not aware of such procedure. Your Honor.
If we get rid of the grouping business, I don't see how a leadership role in gambling justifies a leadership enhancement in the tax case. They seem completely unrelated.
And on that, I would respectfully disagree. I think the district court was not clearly erroneous. The district court was right when the district court found that these were all one big enterprise. The defendants had nine businesses.
But they clearly weren't one big enterprise. First there was gambling, and then there was an effort to conceal the income from the tax authorities. And that was a separate scheme in which these people, they may not be the innocent dupes that their lawyer portrays them, but they were not the leaders. Tedder was the leader in the tax evasion.
First of all, under 3B1.1, one need only control one participant. They certainly controlled Moreau, who's PD's nephew and also the chief financial officer for Gold Medal, when he had supervision over those tax evasion accounts. That was part of his job, to monitor those accounts. And second of all, the question is whether it's relevant conduct, Your Honor. And under 1B1.3, this was conduct that occurred during the gambling offense. It was in furtherance of the offense, and it was in the course of attempting to avoid detection for the offense. Look, they have to pay 2% on all the illegal wagers, if they're wagers coming from the United States, under 26 U.S.C. 4401. 2% on $324 million is $6,494,000. They didn't want to pay it. They didn't want to file their corporate returns. They didn't want to pay income tax on this. To save the money, it would cut into the profit, sure, but the more compelling point is it would have given a big red flag to the United States. Hey, we've got this 1084 thing down here in Curacao. We're doing great on this. They're one in the same, and the district court was not clearly erroneous in finding that. Tedder was part of Gold Medal. If you look at the government, he was involved in it. If you look at two things, let me just point you to two things.
Well, what if Tedder had said to Pede and D'Ambrosio, I'll bump off a tax internal revenue inspector for you, and that'll enable you to conceal your income, and Pede and D'Ambrosio say, fine. Now, in that murder plot, would you say that Pede and D'Ambrosio were leaders?
Yes. Sure. It's just subcontracting out something that has helped their business. You're darn right I would. You're darn right I would. Just like the head of LCN, you know, he's trying to, let's say he's got a prostitution or a loan sharking thing. If they kill somebody, even though he doesn't do it, sure, he subcontracted it out. Tedder is no different.
Subcontracting. Tedder offers. So your idea is that any time some criminal does something for someone else, the criminal is the subcontractor and the other one is the leader automatically.
Well, the question is the first question is whether or not it's relevant conduct or not. Okay, and then the second question is whether or not
it certainly would be in my case.
In your situation, it sure would be. It sure would be relevant conduct. And then the question is whether or not the defendant supervised them. In your case, sure, he tells him to kill him. You know, that's pretty compelling supervision. At least it is to the person that gets killed.
What are you talking about, supervision?
Supervision. They told Tedder how much money they wanted out. They told him how much money they wanted sent off to these islands. They told him how much he wanted back as consulting fees.
Are you saying that if I go to a bank and ask for a loan of $100,000, I'm the supervisor of the bank because I told them what I want?
No.
Well, then if you go to a crooked lawyer and say, I want the following money shielded from tax, how does that make you a supervisor?
If you provide explicit direction, and then you have one of your employees
supervising
that.
Provide explicit direction to the bank. I want to borrow $100,000. I'm explicit. Does that make me a supervisor of the bank?
No.
Then what's the difference?
The difference is that Tedder, they needed a subcontractor. They needed somebody.
Well, I need a bank loan.
But that's a fundamentally different relationship, Your Honor.
No, it isn't. It's the same thing. I go to a lawyer. Am I the lawyer's supervisor if I say I'd like the lawyer to draw up a will leaving X, Y, Z? Am I the supervisor of the lawyer?
Not in that case, but I think that this is fundamentally different.
This is why, because it's a crooked lawyer.
But Tedder is no different. They needed a.
He's a lawyer who is. Some lawyers purvey illegal tax advice. Some legal tax advice. How does that alter the relationship with the client?
Because it's in furtherance. It's fundamentally, Your Honor, no different.
It's in furtherance. Every time you hire a lawyer, it's in furtherance of your financial goals.
It's fundamentally no different than the people they hired to design
the software. What's the difference between hiring an illegal lawyer and a legal lawyer?
I guess I don't understand the question.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your attention.
Does Bertrand have any time?
Two
minutes.
The court has hit on that in this case, this is perhaps the only case that actually may benefit a defendant. If the court follows the rule that I suggest, in 9 cases out of 10, the defendant will actually receive a more serious sentence. This is an odd duck case. But by not grouping the gambling offenses, the guidelines policy of incremental sentencing is reinforced, even if in this case it accrues to its benefit. The government argued that had my client not used Mr. Tedder or repatriated the monies in that way and had filed the tax returns, that this would have been a big red flag and that their case would have been found out and prosecuted. I think some facts belie that point. First and foremost, that the government did find out about them independently and did conduct an investigation into internet gambling in the Western District of Wisconsin. Furthermore, Mr. Tedder had been under investigation by the IRS for some time prior to my client's involvement with him on the tax deferment matter. Finally, I'd like to point out to the court that if the court looks at the 7 factors of must read, this circuit's decision, it illustrates why the relationship of my client in the tax offense ought not be subject to the leadership enhancement under 3B1.1. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.